Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the "no animals were harmed" message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. The news is flying. The smoke and mirrors machine is going full tilt boogie at the very moment that Michael Flynn is pleading guilty to lying to the FBI in an obvious plea deal that he's going to flip on either Jared Kushner or on Trump. At the same time that this is happening, Mitch McConnell is announcing that he's got enough votes to pass the tax bill, the Republican tax scam. This after the New York Times last night reported, and I quote, the politically powerful Koch network warned Republican senators on Thursday not to adopt a last minute change to their tax bill that would help low income parents in exchange for a slightly smaller cut in the corporate tax rate. Oh, you can't do that. You've got to cut our damn taxes. I don't care about low-income parents, right? So that's happening as we speak. Marco Rubio accidentally spoke the truth. He was interviewed by Politico yesterday. And this is from the Los Angeles Times. The headline, Senator Rubio tells a secret. After giving a tax cut to the rich, the Republicans will cut Social Security and Medicare. And so they said, how do you justify the increase in the deficit? And Rubio said the argument would be we can't cut taxes because that would drive up the deficit. That assumes that somehow we can fix the deficit through higher taxes, and we can't. Now, just understand what Rubio just said. He said we can expand the deficit by $1.5 billion by lowering taxes. But if we raise taxes, it will not solve the deficit problem, which is a complete lie. Right? Wrong. The LA Times notes, Rubio delivered his statements. This is Michael Hiltzik. Rubio delivered his statements in full earnest wonk mode, all but shaking his head in regret at the painful reality he claimed to be outlining. He said, and I quote from Marco Rubio, the driver of our debt is the structure of Social Security and Medicare for future beneficiaries. We still have time to responsibly restructure these programs. Now, when Republicans like Marco Rubio start talking about restructuring Medicare and Social Security, you know what the hell is going on. In fact, Social Security works. Alex Lawson's group yesterday sent out a piece going, we know what structural changes he has in mind, raising the retirement age, cutting benefits, and ultimately destroying both programs. Republicans have used the same playbook over and over again. Massive tax cuts for the wealthy, using the increased deficit as a justification to cut our earned benefits. So that's what's going on. And you know, we'll see if the vote happens in the next few minutes. If you want to call a senator, not sure. Susan Collins seems to be the deciding vote here. Looks like Jeff Flake and Bob Corker are voting no, and Susan Collins is going to be the deciding vote. 202-224-3121 is the number for Congress. 202-224-3121. Check it out. Meanwhile, over at The New Yorker, well, let's talk about this thing with Flynn for a minute. It looks like what's going on here is that Michael Flynn was apparently explicitly instructed by Donald Trump to make contact with the Russians during the election. Now, that's not a good thing. Right? I mean, that may well be a major crime. I'm not an expert on this stuff, but whether it's a crime or not, hey, go talk to a foreign country that is in many ways our adversary, and you know, let's see what we can work out to help get me elected. Is that, if that's the essence of it, this whole thing is going down in flames. And the Republican tax scam this morning may go down in flames with it. You got the Dow falling. It's only down 145 points right now. It was down a couple hundred points earlier. It seems to be recovering. I mean, the Dow's it's a major bull market. I got the Aiden forecast last night, the investment newsletter that Louise and I have subscribed to for years and years. And they occasionally underwrite this program, in fact, or sponsor it, whatever the word is. And we call them the girls, Marianne and what's her sister's name? Barbara? No. Well, whatever. The Aiden sisters. You know, they're pointing out that this is a bull market. This thing is going, and it's probably going to continue to go for some time. It could go for another couple of years unless things intervene, you know, like another Great Depression or the president being impeached or Michael Flynn being arrested and pleading guilty in a plea deal. I mean, you know, what's this going to do? And let's stop this facade, this nonsensical story that the stock market is somehow an indication of the health of the American economy. The stock market is an indication of the wealth of the top 1%. Most American families, the majority of American families, own no stock. And, you know, the average amount of stock owned by people who actually do own stock in the bottom 99% is, you know, somewhere between $10,000 and $25,000. I've seen a variety of numbers, but it's a relatively irrelevant amount of money when you consider the trillions of dollars that are traded every day in the stock markets. So, you know, the stock market going up or down in response to the Republicans getting their tax cut or not does not, you know, it's being spun in the media as, hey, Joe Sixpack, if the stock market goes down, that's a bad thing for you. Well, ultimately, it may be if it means that the entire economy is imploding. But it's not because the Republicans failed to get their tax cuts. It's because because we're in a bubble. The entire thing is being inflated by the Fed. And has been since 2008. This is how they got us out of the crash. And if Trump thinks he's going to goose the economy, he's going to stimulate the economy, you know, through changes in tax policy. Well, first of all, it's largely not going to stimulate the economy because most of the benefits are going to the very, very wealthy. And in fact, people on the low end of the spectrum, the bottom, you know, bottom three quarters of Americans, people making under 50 grand a year, they're going to see their taxes go up. And it's even worse if you're making less than $30,000 a year. You see your taxes go up substantially, particularly after 2027, when all of the individual tax breaks go away, and the only tax breaks that are left are the tax breaks for corporations. That is the tax cut from 35 to 20% for the corporate rate. The tax break for billionaires, that is the capital gains tax, or excuse me, the inheritance tax, and the capital gains tax, of course. And a tax break for corporations that stash money overseas, right? You had that little window, and then we go back to normal rules, which encourage companies to store their money overseas and then borrow against it for operating expenses. So all this stuff about, oh, gee, you know, if the Republicans don't get their tax bill, then the stock market is going to drop. Yeah, it might happen, but it doesn't speak to the life of ordinary people. So anyway, there is a lot going on in the news. I got to share this with you. Andy Borowitz nails it. This, by the way, back to Mike Flynn. I just wanted the ABC News is reporting, Brian Ross on ABC News. Michael Flynn promised, quote, full cooperation to the Mueller team, quote, and is prepared to testify that as a candidate, Donald Trump, quote, directed him to make contact with the Russians, end quote. This might be Trump's Waterloo. So are Republicans now going to bust their backs to get Trump's tax bill passed, the tax bill that either Trump is lying about, or far more likely, Steve Mnuchin and the other multi-millionaires and billionaires in his cabinet are lying to Trump about it. And Trump actually thinks that he's doing the right thing. He actually thinks he's got a Democratic tax bill here. No, it's a Republican tax bill. It's going to cut your taxes by $1 billion, Donnie. Stop saying that it's going to hurt you and your rich friends. It's the opposite. Anyhow, I'll share Andy Borowitz with you when we get back. We'll pick up your calls. It's Anything Goes weekend today. We'll be back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Back with your calls right after this. And welcome back. John in Crawfordville, Florida. Hey, John, what's on your mind today? Thanks for watching Free Speech TV.
Hi, Tom. It's an honor to speak with you again, and I want to thank you for the information and the inspiration that you put out over the airways. I originally had called to remind people that we've still got a lot of work to do. You've got to get out there, vote, get others registered to vote. We've got to return Democrats to the government control. And I want to offer congratulations to Mueller for nailing Flynn and getting essentially a full confession out of him.
Yeah, this is a major
nightmare of an administration to an end.
Yeah, this is a major scalp. This, Flynn is about as high as you can get in the administration. I mean, you know, a national security advisor and one of the campaign managers essentially. This is about as close to Trump as you can get, short of his son-in-law, or his daughter, or his own son. So yeah, I'm with you. You called about climate change.
Yes. In my background, I'm an expert in wastewater management. And one of the things that I've been studying is algae blooms. Mm. And so I wanted to encourage people, if they are climate deniers, if they have any doubts about the impact of what we're doing to our planet, just study the simple subject of damage due to algae blooms. We're at the point now where several municipalities are losing their water supplies because they cannot control the overgrowth of toxic algae blooms. Toledo, Ohio is an example. Hmm. So people keep your eyes open.
These algae blooms produce a neurotoxin, don't they? Isn't this the
yes.
Spirulina?
There are some out in the ocean that are extremely dangerous and deadly. Those are known as red tides. But the green algae blooms that happen in fresh water, those creatures are both beneficial and harmful if they get overgrown, as many things are harmful.
Is that by causing hypoxia?
I'm sorry.
Is that by causing hypoxia, by sucking all the oxygen out of the water? Although green chlorophyll, those would be plants that are introducing oxygen. They'd be sucking out carbon dioxide.
Exactly, and both are happening. But you nailed it on your first statement, in that their carcasses then have to sink down and get decomposed, which then consume oxygen and other nutrients. And then what's happening is that they blanket the surface of the water so that the bottom feeding bacteria and organisms that are helping to decompose the algae can no longer decompose them. So they build it up, and it's essentially the mechanism that creates the huge dead zones around, for example, the Mississippi Basin and the Gulf of Mexico dead zone, which is now as large as the state of New Jersey.
Right.
So these things are, just the one simple little, aspect of climate change that people can see with their own eyes is just go around their neighborhoods and their you know, the countryside and look at ponds. And, for example, I have a koi pond that it's almost impossible, as I live down here in Florida and experience what's been an amazing run of just...
John, we got to wrap it up. I'm sorry, we're hitting the... When you hear the music, you got 10 seconds. We'll be right back. Hey, everybody's talking about superfoods, those nutritionally dense foods that are especially beneficial to your health. Did you know that one of the most powerful superfoods you can put into your body is beets? They're loaded with an important nutrient that increases your blood flow, which increases your energy. But who wants to eat a pile of beets every day? Not me. But now you can get the energy benefits of beets in a powerful, concentrated superfood drink, Superbeets. Only Superbeets is made from beets grown to exacting standards, then concentrated into superfood crystals. Superbeets promotes the body's own natural ability to produce healthier circulation for increased energy and stamina all day long. So if you want the benefits of a powerful superfood, call 800-568-9889 or go to tomsbeets.com. With your first order, get another 30-day supply of Superbeets for free, plus indicator strips to see how Superbeets is working for you, and free shipping. So call 800-568-9889 or go to tomsbeets.com today. That's 800-568-9889, tomsbeets.com on the interwebs. Back. Tom Hartman here with you and Denny in Berwyn, Illinois. Hey, Denny, what's on your mind today?
Hi. Yeah, I just, I'm an RT watcher. I really like that show. I'm sorry that it's being censored by the United States, but they are there are people around the world noticing now. But the thing that I saw, there's a wonderful poll that Ed Schultz, I believe, had on his show. Showing that 65% of the Americans now want a third party. 71% of Americans now believe that both parties, the Democrats, they don't believe either party, and I don't believe them either. I'm in the Green Party now, and I've lost total confidence in our system. 71% of the American people now believe both parties are actually hurting the United States. Harvard did a poll a few months ago. 61% of the American people do not believe Russia is the problem. To me, to say Russia is our adversary, they're not my adversary. I think they want to do business with us. I think our problem is the Democrats have gone too much in bed with the military.
Yeah.
And we have
okay.
A problem.
Got it, Denny. Thank you. Here's my take on everything you just said. It's not the political parties. It's us. Well, it's not even us. It's let me reframe the analogy. You know how in relationships, if you haven't been through this yourself, most people know somebody who has been, or you've seen it in other people, where somebody is you know, essentially breaking up with their significant other, and they're saying, the other person is at fault. You know, it's all their fault. And therefore, you know, I've got to move on or whatever. And usually there's plenty of blame on both sides and, you know, plenty to share. So what's happening is that people are looking at the political parties and they're correctly seeing that the Republican Party is 100% sold out. And there are, you know, a not inconsequential number of Democrats who have sold out to at least particular industries, big pharma, big banks, things like that. And they're saying, screw it. You know, we need a new party, just like that person thinking that they need a new partner. Right. If I can just get a new husband, wife, boyfriend, girlfriend, whatever it may be, life will be perfect. Well, sorry, wherever you go, you take your same head with you. Whatever relationship you're in, you take your same head with you. And it's the same thing with the political parties. As long as Citizens United and the Buckley decision are still in place, as long as the Supreme Court continues to assert that a political party and the participants in it, the politicians, can take money from billionaires and corporations without limit, you're going to have corrupt political parties. Look at the Green Party in 2008. In the 2008 election, there was a Green Party, I believe it was Iowa. It was one of the northwestern or western states. And the Green Party took, I wanted to say 100 grand, but I don't, it's been a few years, and I'm not sure I have the number exactly right. It might have just been 10,000, but I thought it was $100,000 from a Republican donor in exchange for putting a Green Party candidate on the ticket, specifically to split the vote with the Democrat. And the Green Party took the money. Now, you know, that doesn't mean the Green Party is corrupt, but that's an example of it. So, you know, I hear your rant and, you know, oh, you know, woe is me and the parties all suck and America's going down the tubes and all. I don't buy it. I think, you know, we're doing just fine here, broadly speaking, but specifically the major problem that we have is money in politics. And you don't solve the problem of money in politics by creating a third party. You'll just have three corrupt political parties, or creating a fourth party or a fifth party. You know, every one of them, as long as billionaires can figure out a way to buy their way into the hearts of politicians, and they will always do that. And you know, you can't, every politician isn't as noble as Mark Pocan or Bernie Sanders. I mean, you've got people out there who, you know, they need money to run for their next campaign, particularly in big states like, you know, California and New York. It takes an enormous amount of money to run for political office. That's wrong. We need to change that. And once we change that, then our political parties will have some integrity restored to them. Mark Taylor Canfield in Seattle. Hey, Mark, what's up?
Hey, Tom. We just elected our first female mayor since Bertha Knight Landis took on corruption in Seattle and fired the mayor back in 1926.
Whoa.
That's Jenny Birkin is our new mayor, the former U.S. attorney. So,
congratulations to her.
Progressive politics continues.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's a very progressive candidate and ran largely on the issue of homelessness because we've had such a problem. There's been a civil emergency declared by the mayor and by the executive of Martin Luther King Jr. County here in Washington State because of the skyrocketing rents. But I wanted to call you and mark the anniversary of some of the largest protests in our country this week, the demonstrations in Seattle against the World Trade Organization that took place in 1999.
Mm-hmm.
And they called it the Battle in Seattle.
Yep.
And actually, Woody Harrelson and Charlize Theron made a film about it, which was an independent film. I guess it wasn't made by any of the major studios. It was pretty much funded by the actors. And I got a chance to meet them while they were here in Seattle screening that film for the first time. But the truth is that the vast majority of the participants were practicing peaceful civil disobedience. So the idea that it was actually a battle is very much a misconception.
Yeah, it's sort of like in D.C., you know, the dozen or so people breaking windows got all the attention. The million people in the streets got ignored. Mark, thanks for the update. Thanks for the report. Mark Taylor Canfield in Seattle. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
Back with your calls and more of the news of the day right after this.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
There we go.
Sorry.
Okay, welcome back. Sorry about that. The Wisconsin Election Integrity Group, WisconsinElectionIntegrity.org, and thanks to the caller yesterday who alerted me to this, is doing some amazing work. Karen McKim is going to be with us in just a second. This is a little clip from a video that they're putting together, or they've put together. Check this out. Listen to this.
In Racine County, they were only going to do a machine count. We decided to do our own hand count. We can see the ballots very clearly. Our numbers were quite a bit off from the scanner. So we brought this up immediately to the county clerk and said, you know, we think this machine did not count these ballots correctly. If we could have somebody just hand count this one small ward, they absolutely refused to do that.
Wow. So Karen McKim is with us with WisconsinElectionIntegrity.org. Karen, and you can tweet Karen at Karen_McKim, M-C-K-I-M. And the website, of course, is WisconsinElectionIntegrity.org. Karen, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's delightful to be on you.
Yeah, you guys are doing amazing work. I looked up Racine County this morning, and it looks like up until about 10 years ago, Racine County was kind of 50-50. They'd occasionally elect a Republican, but since around 2005, it seems, Racine County has been more than 50% Democratic voting. Might that have anything to do with why so many votes did not get counted for president in the last election in Wisconsin and Racine County?
It might have. It didn't have anything to do with the fact that Racine County used a machine called an Optech Eagle that was incapable of reading many absentee and mailed-in ballots. And so to the extent the Democratic Party pushed its voters to use early and absentee vote ballots more than maybe the Republican Party did, I don't know. Hmm. That would account for more of the Democratic votes being missed.
Wow. So tell us exactly what happened. You people vote on paper, and they think, oh, it's a paper ballot, and then that paper gets read by an optical scanning machine. You were, what I read is correct, you were hitting, in some places in Racine County, you were hitting 30% of the presidential votes not being counted?
The 30.8% miscounting machine was in Marinette County, in the city of Marinette.
Uh-huh.
The voting machines in Racine County, the ones that we audited, the day hand count of, we found out that they missed 2.5% of the votes, which is one in every 40 votes, which is just outrageous.
Yeah, but one out of three is even worse.
Oh, I know. And that city of Marinette miscount, the election officials noticed that during their canvass, and they certified anyway. That's the main point we want to make with this activity we're doing. Our election officials don't notice, and if they notice, they don't correct even obvious electronic miscounts. You know, what message does that send to the hackers or the corrupt insiders that want to corrupt our voting machines? If they know the election officials will see as many as a third of the votes go missing and not do anything about it.
Now, Donald Trump won Wisconsin by a fairly small margin. My recollection is it was around 17,000 votes. Am I remembering right?
Oh, gosh, I don't have that number off the top of my head. I think it was closer to 20, but I wouldn't.
Yeah, okay, well, let's say 20,000.
Yeah.
Do you think that more than 20,000 votes got lost?
Well, in the recount, if you look at the results of the recount, and they're posted right there on the Wisconsin Election Commission website, you can see that the county clerks in Wisconsin changed at least a minimum of 17,681 votes in the recount. And that's only when they ran, you know, half the ballots back through the same voting machines that they counted them on before.
And this was not a statewide recount. This was a recount that was limited to a few counties, right?
Oh, no. The Wisconsin recount last year in 2016 was a full statewide recount. Yeah, okay. We're proud of that. Wisconsin was the one state that pulled off a full statewide recount in that presidential election.
But the recount did not involve actually counting the paper ballots, or did it?
Wisconsin law leaves that up to the county. Then the county clerks in the larger counties chose to use voting machines in the recount, and the smaller counties tended to count by hand. And it ended up that about half the ballots were run back through voting machines and half were hand-counted.
Through the scanners, yeah. So
they were hand-counted. And half the ballots were hand-counted.
Right, but the half that were run through the voting machines, they were actually run through a scanner that tabulated the votes.
Yes, yeah, right. Okay. And that's what Racine did, and that's why they got the same miscount in both the election and the recount.
So is the bumper sticker here, the bottom line, the summary of what you discovered, that these optical scanners are in some cases, particularly, you know, it's missing 30% of the votes for president, highly unreliable? Or is this a function of the scanners? I mean, the optical scanners, they use little tiny, you know, LED sensor kind of things, and or whatever they're called, you know, it's like in a camera. And you know, sometimes they just get paper dust on them. They get crud on them over time. It makes it harder for them to read. They get misaligned. I mean, is this a maintenance problem? Is this a computer problem? Is this a we should go back to just doing it all by hand problem? What's going on?
All of the above. You know, voting machines are just like any other computers. They're a little more simple than most business computers, and they're maintained and operated by, again, bless their hearts, our local election officials who have no particular IT experience or expertise. So, yes, there's maintenance problems. There's accidental misprogramming problems. There was a ridiculous miscount in Stoughton, Wisconsin, just 3 years ago or so, with a referendum that was totally miscounted simply by an accidental programming error. They can get dust bunnies in them. That happened. This particular miscount, the one that was so bad in the November presidential election, not just in Racine County but elsewhere, was blamed on ink color, that the older voting machines couldn't read ink that didn't have carbon in it. And because so many people marked their ballots by mail and mailed them in, they were using the wrong color ink, and the machine was blind to it.
Right.
And our local election officials didn't take the effort to, you know, check that those votes were being counted. They just ignored it.
Right.
And
that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I don't think that's the entire reason, because if it was ink color, you'd probably see, you know, a fairly standard miscount rate across all precincts, you know, because you don't have precincts where all the voters at home decided to use green highlighters to mark their ballots.
Right. Yeah, Karen, we're almost out of time. We're talking to Karen McKim, who is the coordinator with the Wisconsin Election Integrity.org. Do you see anything that might be construed as evidence of malice, of essentially a hack?
Deliberate miscounting, no. Deliberate carelessness about accuracy, yes. I'm sorry, I'm not gonna calm down about this just because it was accidental.
Right.
Our election officials knew that those machines were miscounting, or should have known. We could see the miscounts just sitting at home at our desks, and we're not the ones paid to make sure that they're accurate.
Wow.
And yet they went ahead and certified anyway. I mean, that's how we knew which precinct. Because we could see the miscount.
There you go. Karen McKim, she's the coordinator of WisconsinElectionIntegrity.org. You can check it out on the web. You can tweet her at Karen_McKim, McKim. Karen, thank you.
Thank you.
Great talking with you. We'll be back.
Yeah, bye-bye.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Back with more of the news of the day and your calls right after this. Welcome back. Michael in Orlando, Florida. Hey, Michael, what's on your mind today?
Hello.
Hey, Michael.
Hey, Tom, two things that I'd heard, or one thing I heard yesterday, and I believe it was a member of the House of Representatives. He was talking about the bottom line is they were talking about the $10,000 property tax exemption being allowed.
Right.
But he was talking about, well, when you file your 1040A, well, remember, we've doubled your standard exemption or your standard deduction, and you've still got that $10,000 property deduction. Well, you can't itemize your deduction and take the property tax if you file on 1040A.
Oh, excellent point. So who said that you could do that?
So he doesn't know. You can either take the standard deduction.
Right, you get to choose
the itemized deduction, but you're not going to, unless you're going to let them double dip.
So, who said this? Trump?
No, it wasn't Trump. I believe it was one of the Senate members who was talking about that. And
yeah.
It's like you don't even know what you're talking about in that.
Yeah. Well, I think that's true of the vast majority of them, obviously. And Trump doesn't know what he's talking about. He's like, this is really going to hurt me, and this is going to really hurt my rich friends. No. It's going to give you billions of dollars if you're accurately stating your net worth. Excellent point, Michael.
And here's another thing, and I haven't heard it discussed at all. And this is yet another way that this GOP tax plan basically sticks it to not only the middle class, the upper, it basically sticks it to everybody, and that is, what happens to the municipal bond market?
Right.
And here's where I'm going with that.
Well, and beyond that, by the way, what happens to municipalities and states, period? You know?
Well, yeah, I mean, in real simple terms, if I'm a bank, and I'm looking to invest my money that I haven't put out in loans, I can buy U.S. Treasury securities and not pay any state tax, or I can buy municipal securities and not pay any federal tax. So let's say that I've got a, let's say I've got a 10% treasury that's available to me. There has been time when that was that the case. So my tax, at my after tax yield on that is 6%. I pay a 40% tax rate.
Right.
So the equivalent in the municipal market would be a 6% municipal bond.
Correct, because municipal bonds are tax free.
They're tax free on the federal side.
Right. At least so far. Now, do you know if this Republican bill, if it's eliminating the deductibility of state and federal taxes, is it also eliminating the deductibility of interest on state and local bonds?
I have no idea. But so
I'll bet it doesn't, because most of those bonds are held by rich people.
Rate, you cut that corporate tax rate from 40% to 20%, using wrong numbers. Cut it from 40 to 20%. Your after-tax yield on that 10% security is now 8%, which means the municipal bond is going to have to yield 8% to compete in the market.
Right, which is going to put a lot of cities out of business because they won't be able to afford to raise money at that price.
Plus what happened to the value of the bonds that are currently out there.
Yeah.
Because they're now going to be priced out to yield at an 8%, and they were originally issued to yield 6%. So you've just killed the bond market. The existing bond market.
They're going to kill the housing market. They're going to kill the health insurance market. They're going to wipe out towns. There's a piece over on Think Progress about how the state of New Mexico is going to be thrown into instant chaos. They're dependent upon local taxes that no longer will be deductible, income taxes and things, state income tax. But they're not as healthy as California or Washington State or New York State. Actually, Washington State doesn't have an income tax, but they're not as healthy as California or New York. So they're going to be severely damaged by this Republican tax scam. It's pretty incredible. Michael, I got to move along, but thank you for the call. Patty in Missoula, Montana. Hey, Patty, what's on your mind?
If Trump is so adamant against the Muslims, then he needs to give back that $100 million contract that his daughter received from the Muslim Saudi Arabia, and he needs to not be selling weapons to the Muslims. $550 billion worth of weapons he sold to Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
And then before our representatives vote on any tax bill, Trump needs to show his taxes. He's real good at cheating everybody out of money, filing bankruptcy 6 times, paying his workers $4 an hour, putting contractors completely out of business after the building's built. I'm not going to pay you.
Yeah, the guy's a grifter.
I'll keep you tied up in court.
He's a grifter. He's a classic scam artist and has been, as far as anybody can tell, his whole life.
And, yeah, his whole life.
He bragged about this to Tony Schwartz, who was, the guy who ghostwrote Art of the Deal, that, he had creative exaggerations or something like that. He has all these euphemisms for lying to people that he thinks are part of, a genuinely successful sales strategy or something like that. It's bizarre. I'm with you, Patty. I is spot on. On all points.
Yeah,
thank you for the
show your taxes.
There you go. Show, yeah. I think, though, that's going to be left in the dust as it's like, it's going to be more like, hey, want to visit a federal prison? Patty, thank you for the call. We'll be back. Stick around. Welcome back. Just quickly bring you up to date on the news of the day, and then we'll pick up your phone calls. Michael Flynn, of course, the former national security advisor to the president, has pled guilty to lying to the FBI specifically about Donald Trump instructing him to open lines of communication with Russia. And this is going to get very, very messy very quickly. So there's that going on. Roy Moore. New news about Roy Moore. Back in 2011, now this is just a few years ago, Roy Moore was the author of an academic course. It was called Law and Government, an Introductory Study Course. And in that study course, Roy Moore, this is from an article by Matthew Chapman that is Yeah, by Matthew Chapman at Share Blue Media. Roy Morse wrote that the ideal woman stays at home and the Bible forbids women from participation in politics entirely. Women should not run for office, women should not serve in political office, and women should not vote, according to a college course that Roy Moore wrote. In fact, he said, this is what he said, there's a clip of him saying it, she's not a warrior, she's not a judge, she's a woman, created by God, glorious in her place, in her conduct, and in her role. Nothing is said in Scripture that supports the notion that she is qualified or called to be a civil magistrate. In other words, women should not be judges either. Then Matthew Chapman notes in this article for Share Blue Media, incidentally, Moore's co-author, a fellow by the name of Phillips, get his first name here. Yeah, Doug Phillips. He was he ran the far-right Vision Forum, which went bankrupt or went out of business anyhow. So he says, incidentally, Moore's co-author Phillips was sued by a woman who detailed, quote, an emotionally, psychologically, and sexually abusive relationship that started when she was 15 years old, end of quote. So Roy Moore and his friends. Meanwhile, we found out now who is paying for Roy Moore. Lachlan Markey, writing over at the Daily Beast, writes, the chief financier of a leading pro-Roy Moore super PAC is a deep-pocketed Republican businessman who dropped eight figures in the 2016 races alone and is looking to continue propping up the party's most conservative candidates. Lachlan Markey writes, Illinois businessman Richard, I'm not sure how to pronounce this, it's U-I-H-L-E-I-N, is that Uelin? Provided $100,000 to the group Proven Conservatives PAC since September. This is basically Roy Moore's super PAC. The only major financial support, Lachlan writes, that it had previously reported came from a company owned by the family of Alabama timber executive Geis Slauson. In addition to Uelin, or however you say his name, Proven Conservative received money in September from Peter Nicholas, a Florida-based businessman whose chain of Taco Bell franchises has also donated to the campaign of a Republican who is challenging Maxine Waters. And then he notes, Uelin, if I'm saying his name right, the shipping and office supply mogul and his wife donated a combined $26.4 million to federal campaigns, party organs, super PACs, and interest groups during the 2016 election cycle, according to FEC data. Which brings us to lobbying as my final point here. There are a total of 6,243 lobbyists who this year registered to lobby on issues of taxation in Washington, D.C. That's 57% of all lobbyists. This is from Public Citizen, citizen.org. That's more than 11 lobbyists for every member of Congress. 20 corporations and trade associations have hired at least 50 lobbyists apiece. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce has 100 lobbyists. Business Roundtable has 51. Members of 26 industries have hired at least 150 lobbyists each to work on tax issues, led by pharmaceuticals. The pharmaceutical industry has 653 lobbyists. The insurance industry has 600 lobbyists. Comcast has 23 lobbying firms. They've hired 23 different companies to lobby on behalf of Comcast, presumably to do everything from lowering their taxes to destroying net neutrality. Anheuser-Busch has 19 lobbying companies. Verizon, 17. Microsoft, 16. Altria Group, the tobacco company, 15. Excuse me. This is extraordinary. Just extraordinary. Jim in Los Angeles. Hey, Jim, what's up?
Hi, Tom, Professor Hartman. I'm working on my doctorate's degree from Tom Hartman University.
Well, thank you, Jim. What's on your mind today?
First and foremost, for 10 days, let's at least mention Alabama every day. You know, we have to win back the House and the Senate, and millennials can do it. I don't wish to shame them, but 86% of all millennials did not vote in the last off-year election. Right. If they do vote, it flips it. And it's we have to win this seat. Like you said, we basically need 60, and we can do it. I know I can win the House. We have 14 Republicans in California, and we should have zero. Anyhow, both Auburn and Alabama football players. There's an article on Doug Jones today in the New York Times. Did you see that?
I didn't read the article. I saw the headline. It said Doug Jones has been planning to run for a while.
The article was pretty generic, except there was one person from Alabama who called Mr. Jones a Southern hero. And, you know, the article didn't do anything, and then I had neglected looking at the pictures. And I looked at the pictures of the family of Carol Robertson, one of four black girls killed in 1963 church bombing.
Right.
And Mr. Jones, right after winning in 2001, it's amazing, but Alabama and Auburn have incredible football teams. Those people should look at those. I'm putting it out to everyone in Alabama and every millennial, especially every college student, the Republicans want to take away your right to get a doctorate's degree. You know, they want to. Right.
Or a master's degree, for that matter. I mean, they want to outlaw graduate assistant teachers or functionally outlaw. They, you know, have to pay thousands of dollars in taxes every year if you take a graduate assistant unpaid teaching job. Yeah, spot on. Jim, I want to move along but pick up other callers here, but spot on. Very, very well said. John in Sparks, Nevada. Hey, John, what's on your mind today?
What's on my mind is the Electoral College.
Okay.
And the fact that I hear so little about the Electoral College. Now, besides Priestley's TV, I do watch MSNBC, because Rachel Maddow is one of my favorite commentators. But following her every night comes Brian Williams, who's been demoted since his behavior caused him to get demoted. Anyway, Brian Williams starts his part of the program, the news, by saying, well, we just have finished the 115th day of the Trump administration. Tomorrow he'll tell you at the beginning it's the 116th day. Mm-hmm. And every night we learn from Brian what day of, however, he, Brian, or Free Speech TV, I've never heard discuss the Electoral College very much either.
Yeah.
And when we talk about what day of the Trump administration is, we're talking history.
Yeah, well, and it's two of the last three presidents.
College, if the commentators would remind us that we wouldn't have Trump as a president if it weren't for the Electoral
And we wouldn't have had George Bush either. George W. Bush lost to Al Gore by over 500,000 votes, just like Donald Trump lost to Hillary Clinton by over 3 million votes. But the Electoral College, which was designed to cement the institution of slavery in the United States, took it away from him.
Right.
John, spot on. Very well said. Patrick in Seaside, California. Hey, Patrick, what's up?
Greetings from May Brussel country.
Thank you.
Tom, how are you?
Good. What's on your mind?
I wanted to talk about net neutrality and the upcoming protests on Thursday. But before I did, thanks for getting to work and getting your book back on Amazon for a reasonable price. For those of your members of your excellent staff, if they want an interesting research project over the weekend, there's a book called Journalists for Hire that definitely seems to be suppressed. It's supposed to come out on May 15th, and it kept getting delayed. Now there's a hardback copy available for $997.09 that has a publication date of January 1st, 1657, and a paperback copy for $2,796 supposedly was published in 1847. So there's a lot of goofy things going on with this book.
Boy, I guess so.
By Dr. Udo Ulfkata, who apparently died of a heart attack in January. Journalist for Hire. I would really like to know what the hell is going on with that book.
Hang on just a second, Patrick. Let me just short circuit your conspiracy theory, perhaps. It's not at all uncommon when an author dies for a publisher to pull their books. The publishing industry.
But this was supposed to come out in May.
Doesn't matter.
This kept getting delayed.
Doesn't matter. The publishing industry, and I can tell you this as a guy who's got 25 or 26 books in print. I've written over 35. The publishing industry 30 years ago, 40 years ago, when I first started trying to get my stuff published, really took writing seriously. And they, you know, what they cared about was the quality of what you wrote and whether it would catch an audience and how did it read. And, you know, lots of editors involved. You had three or four layers of editors with a book. You know, I went through all this back in the late 80s and early 90s. you know, with the first couple of books that I published. And then the publishing industry really changed, and it really changed, I think, with the rise first of Barnes & Noble and then with Amazon. And now publishers come to you and they say, as an author, the first question a publisher would ask me is, you know, what are you going to do to sell your book? Because the sale of the book is no longer the responsibility of the publisher. It's now the responsibility of the author. And if the author doesn't have a high-profile position, if they don't have, like, a radio show, if they don't have, if they're not in the public eye, if they can't sell the book, then the publishers, you know, they don't pay decent advances and they don't promote them. And if you die, that's it. They're going to pull it. Patrick, I got to run, but thanks for the call. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
More of your calls right after this on Anything Goes Friday, Steve. When was the last time you looked forward to sitting at your desk all day? Since getting my new X chair, not only am I enjoying the time spent in my desk much more than ever, but I can't believe how much more productive I'm being. My X chair is unbelievably stylish, and thanks to all the ways that you can personalize it, it literally molds itself to my body. Trust me, this is not your grandfather's office chair. And because I don't need to keep having to take breaks or to stretch my back, I'm getting more done in a day than ever before. If you spend a lot of time in your office chair every day, then you need to try the X chair. In fact, here's a terrific deal just for my listeners. The makers of X chair want you to feel the X chair difference for yourself. So if you go to xchairtom.com, that's the letter X, chair, T-H-O-M.com, not only will they knock $100 off the price, but they'll even throw in a free footrest if you use the promo code Tom. Just go to xchairtom.com now. I love my X chair, and you will too. So check out xchairtom, that's xchair, T-H-O-M.com. Check out xchairtom.com, and be sure to use T-H-O-M as the promo code for your $100 discount. And welcome back. Alan in Crown Point, Indiana. Hey, Alan, thanks for listening to WCPT. What's up?
Yes, sir. The other day you interviewed one of the House representatives who was recovering from a heart attack.
Yeah, it was Congressman Mark Pocan. And just for the record, he didn't have a heart attack. He went in for a routine physical, and they discovered that he had a blockage in one of his arteries, and so they fixed it.
Okay, I'm glad he's doing better.
Yeah.
Anyway, he mentioned his insurance coverage was by Obamacare, Affordable Care Act, and he also said he's waiting on an insurance that would cover pre-existing conditions. I thought the House of Representatives were covered by an insurance policy based on their own, based on what they have themselves. Why would he have Affordable Care Act? Can you help me on that?
Sure. During the debates in 2009 on the Affordable Care Act, the Republicans, in my recollection, it was Chuck Grassley, although it might have originated in the House, but the Republicans put into the Affordable Care Act what they thought was a poison pill. They thought that the Democrats, that this would sabotage the legislation. And the Democrats went along with it. They said, fine, we'll take that amendment. And the amendment said that all members of Congress must use the Affordable Care Act. They must buy their insurance on the D.C. exchange for themselves and everybody in their office, all their staffs. They must use the Affordable Care Act exchange-based insurance. And that's why Mark Pocan, Congressman Pocan, has Obamacare. It's why every member of the House and the Senate has Obamacare. And, one of the things that this piece of the law did is make it harder and harder for Republican politicians to lie about Obamacare, because that's what they all have. And for them to sit around and go, oh, it's terrible, and you're going to die, and they got death panels and all that. Wait a minute, that's your insurance. Is that what you're experiencing? So that's what's going on, Alan.
Okay, thanks a lot, Tom.
Sure. Good talking to you. Chris in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Hey, Chris, what's up? Chris?
Hey, Tom, I'm sorry. I was taking you off speaker.
Oh, that's...
I was talking to your screener. And I was just thinking about, in terms of if we end up getting Pence as president, what are your thoughts on getting Walmart, the Walton family, to side with the 99%? And if they don't, having a nationwide boycott.
I think that's about as likely as Marie Antoinette having gone on a fast. I mean, it's just. It's like the Walton family. The Walton heirs were the ones who put together the money to hire Frank Luntz back a couple of decades ago to come up with a new way to name the estate tax, the inheritance tax. And he came up with death tax. He did this whole polling thing, this whole NLP thing, you know, what's going to ring in people's brains and whatnot, and which is very deceptive, because if I die, my estate is, you know, it's not, it, the tax doesn't fall on me. It falls on the people who receive my estate, who basically are getting it because, actually, I don't have much of an estate, but if I was worth millions of dollars, right, that would, or over $12 million, actually, or if Louise and I were worth over $22 million, that would be the case. And, you know, so it's deceptive to even call it the death tax. But that, you know, that's the contribution to our political discourse that the Walton family brought us. So I'm skeptical. But, yeah, education would be a great one. Chris, thanks for the call, and thanks for watching Free Speech. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Mark in San Francisco. Hey, Mark, what's on your mind today?
Tom, maybe you can answer this question for me. We know that the banks can seize our accounts. What about credit unions?
I don't believe so, but I could be wrong. That's a question to ask your local credit union.
Yeah, because I remember the last time we had the crash, the seemed like they weren't affected very much.
They were not, because they were never deregulated like the banks were when Glass-Steagall was done away with. The credit unions have always been heavily regulated and thus have been very, very stable, very safe, very secure. Credit unions are not run by banksters, basically. They're not run by people who can make money gambling with your money. It's against the law for credit unions to gamble with your money. So the whole idea of a bail-in, which is where the bank takes your deposit and uses that to rescue themselves when they make stupid investments, as opposed to a bailout where the federal government bails them out, That, to the best of my knowledge, only applies to banking institutions. But I'm not an expert on this. I would suggest that if you're considering a credit union, and I strongly encourage that, that you simply ask that question. But the reality is, even if credit unions could do bail-ins, they probably won't, because they're not going bankrupt the way banks are. They're not engaged in that kind of activity. Mark, I got to move on, but thank you for the call.
That's a good point, Tom. And the thing is, we got to be careful, because, you know, they're going to crash this economy and people have to put their money in a safe place.
Oh, yeah. And Steve Mnuchin, you know, the former Goldman Sachs banker and Gary Cohn, this former Goldman Sachs head in the Trump administration, at the very top of the Trump administration, Secretary of Treasury, member of the cabinet. These guys are committed to making money for the billionaires. I mean, you know, getting the billionaires richer, and that's what they're doing. To the point that Steve Mnuchin is lying to us over the last few weeks about how he had 100 people in the Treasury Department crunching the numbers on the Republican tax plan. It was a flat-out, bald-faced lie. Nobody was even looking at the numbers of the Treasury Department. Mark, thank you for the call. Well said. Mark in Salem, Oregon. Hey, Mark, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom, I'm noticing, you know, this tax bill the Senate is putting forward is, by all projections, going to increase deficit by over $1 trillion. And yet they are still able to pass this, apparently through budget reconciliation and a 50-51 vote majority. Now, if the Democrats can put up a progressive populist, draw the millennials in, and actually flip things in by 2020, you keep saying that they're going to need 60 votes to undo it, when it's being done with 50 and a huge deficit. Now, if you undo it, you're going to run a surplus on the darn thing, and why can't you do it with budget reconciliation and get it done with 50 or 51 votes? You haven't explained that very well.
Well, that's a good question. That's a very good question. The challenge would be, if you tried to do that in 2018, would be a veto from Trump or Pence.
Yeah, but we're talking 2020, because this can't be undone in 2018.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. That's a possibility, Mark, that I frankly had not considered, and I don't know why I didn't, because it's so obvious. You were right. And so thank you for calling and pointing that out.
Okay.
I appreciate it. Thank you, Mark. Chris in Ithaca, New York. Hey, Chris, what's up?
Hey, how you doing today?
Good.
Wonderful.
What's on your mind?
You know, I've been, listening to your show now, and this tax bill is going to just make the rich richer and ultimately likely end up hurting middle class. But one thing that I found that's not been publicized very much that is included in this tax bill is ending the student loan forgiveness for nonprofit work after college, which is absolutely astounding. And, I mean, aside from just, you know, public nonprofit legal representation, it's going to be a huge factor in relieving the incentive for people to go into education programs in college. And ultimately, with the massive shortage of teachers that we already have in this country, it's just going to get even worse.
Yes. There's all kinds of little pieces of this tax bill. It's a 700-page piece of legislation. There's all kinds of little pieces of it that are just, you know, putting the knife into the middle class. You know, you want to teach as a graduate assistant in exchange for tuition? Nah, it's going to cost you a fortune. Teachers are losing their $250 a year deduction for buying supplies for their own students. What's that going to do to our schools? A lot of teachers are just going to eat it, I'm sure. But, you know, what's that doing to our teachers? I mean, what does that say about our values, our Republicans'
values? Well, you ruin morale of a teacher or you know, any number of teachers, they're going to be less inclined to continue teaching.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
By hurting them financially, I mean, we all know that most teachers aren't paid anywhere near what they should be.
Yep.
It's just, it's a number of things that are just going to come crashing down on us.
Yep. Totally agree. Totally agree.
Anyway,
Chris, thank you for the call.
Thanks for your show. Have a great day.
You too. Leslie in Wichita, Kansas. Hey, Leslie, what's up?
Well, hi, Tom. I've never spoken with you before. It's first-time caller.
Well, nice to meet you, Leslie.
And I got a different take. And if just bear with me a little bit.
Okay.
I basically, another caller had stated real clear. He understood real clear. He made six figures.
Right.
He really did. He made six figures, but he didn't understand where his taxes were going.
Right.
And, I mean, he probably has a fancy car and stepping on the street, sidewalk, lights, safety and all. We need maybe to do a 101 and explain taxes a little better.
Right.
And why I'm saying this, a few years ago, a book was written called The Free Lunch by a Johnson. I'm sorry, I don't remember the first name.
Yeah.
And it showed how Walmart went to smaller communities, counties, and got their stores open, got a free ride, a free ticket.
Oh, that was David K. Johnston wrote that.
Oh, yeah. So yeah. You know what I'm...
I do.
And what you're hearing, one lady just said it to you, don't have much on the tax codes or much on taxes. Maybe somebody needs to go back and explain taxes.
There you go.
Why you pay them.
There you go. Leslie, great suggestion and an opportunity for more FDR clips if we weren't out of time. Leslie, thanks for listening to SiriusXM. Thanks for the call. It's great. Nice to meet you. Thank you all. Thank you for being with us today. And this week. It's been a great week, and there's still so much work to do. It's mind-boggling. But we'll be back on Monday with more. And in the meantime, don't forget, democracy is not a spectator sport. It requires all of us. That includes you. Get out there, get active, tag. You're it. See you on Monday.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit tomhartman.com.